Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Krista Joy from DisneyWays.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times and get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. Today, we are joined by the CEO of MiceChat.com, who is also the executive director of the Walt Disney Birthplace Project. Now, that is a major project to restore the birthplace of Walt Disney in Chicago, Illinois. Dusty Sage, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Dusty, can you tell us about this fascinating history of the house where Walt was born and the project you're working on?
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. You know, I didn't even know that Walt had been born in Chicago, Illinois. Like most folks, I always assumed he'd been born in Marceline, Missouri, because you hear so often that, you know, Walt is from little town of Missouri. And come to find out that Walt was, in fact, born in Chicago, Illinois in 1901, and in a house that his father, Elias, built himself in 1893, and that his mother, Flora, designed. So it was a real family affair kind of a house. And in that house, Roy Disney was born, Walt Disney was born, and Ruth Disney was born. So the three youngest Disney kids were all born in that house. There were two older brothers as well, and they lived there too. So at one point, there were seven Disney family members all living together in this tiny little two-bedroom house in Chicago. Imagine that. Wow. By today's standards, imagine having, you know, seven family members in a two-bedroom house. So mom and dad in one room and maybe little baby Ruth.
Yeah.
And then all those other kids having to share a room.
Right, right.
Could you do it?
Depends on how much I like my brothers and sisters.
But it does show you, you know, yeah, just how hard the family had to work to survive. And they were difficult times for sure. And, you know, Elias was a hardworking man, Elias Disney, Walt's dad. In fact, he moved to Chicago to begin with because they were having a World's Fair in Chicago in 1893, and Elias helped build it. So there's the first World's Fair that's kind of in Walt's story, that the World's Fair that his dad helped build. And that same year, he built the house that Walt would later be born in. And I'm sure that Walt, Roy, and all the kids probably were regaled with stories about the amazing World's Fair in Chicago. And it was a really spectacular World's Fair. I believe it was the first World's Fair to ever have electricity. They had a giant Ferris wheel, the first Ferris wheel. And it was just a spectacular master planned. They called it the White City. Just amazing. It brought people from all over the world. A true spectacular event. And that's kind of the framework into which Walt Disney is born. It's that turn of the century vibe, the change from gas to electric, from horse-drawn carriages to cars, the invention of household appliances. It's the carousel of progress in real life. And now you kind of know why that was one of Walt's favorite attractions, because the Carousel of Progress was Walt's journey, and that is the property that I'm responsible for restoring.
Who's the owner of the house? I would have thought that the company or the family museum or somebody would have, you know, done this years ago.
You'd think.
Yeah.
And yet, the house was on the verge of being lost forever. There was a developer interested in buying some of the property there.
Sure.
On the corner on Tripp Avenue where the house is, to tear them down and put in an apartment building. And it would have been a true loss. It's a real, you know, legend was born there. And it's an American dream story, you know, that somebody could be born into very modest circumstances, you know, seven family members in one house. And yet, he becomes one of the most famous people to ever be born in our country. And in fact, to this very day, people all over the world know Walt Disney's name. And, you know, how many people that have ever been born can you say that about? That everywhere in the world, they know who you are. So Chicago really has something special on their hands with this house, and they didn't even know it. Most folks in Chicago don't know that Walt was born there. And sadly, the Disney company is really about the theme parks and making movies and the travel destinations, and they didn't really have any interest at all in the house. And as far as I know, never even looked into buying the property. Now, the rest of the Disney family, they're interested in the Walt Disney Family Museum up in San Francisco, so they've really got their hands tied. They are well aware that we're working on the house, and they're very supportive. We've been in contact with them, and we're likely going to be doing some events up there in San Francisco with them, but they're not interested in the property to own either. And I think that's fine, because we can tell the story in different ways than they might tell it, and that the company, certainly different than the company would tell it, and it just gives people another outlet in a different part of the country to experience the Walt story.
Yeah. So you guys, this project is going to keep the property, keep the house, and try and put it back to 1901 kind of status?
Yes, and I'll tell you a little bit, because you had asked me earlier and I didn't answer, but the owners of the house run a company called Super 78 Studios, and Super 78 makes theme park attractions. So these folks are big theme park lovers, and they realize that they wouldn't have a career if it weren't for Walt Disney, because he really was the genesis of the theme park industry. And there had been amusement parks before, and but really Walt started the modern day theme park, well-planned, safe, wholesome family attraction. And Dina and Brent, who bought the home, knew that they could use their skills at storytelling and theme park design to help tell the story of the Walt Disney birthplace. So the house itself is tiny, and it would really be too small for us to adequately tell the entire story. So what we're going to do is restore the home back to the way it would have looked in 1901, inside and out, but really tell the story in a unique, interactive way with museum exhibits, interactive theater elements, an Ozell soda fountain, and I'll tell you about Ozell in a little bit, and some other things about Chicago and the World's Fair, but there's no room to do that in the house, so we'll start a visitor center nearby, and it'll have all these elements, and you'll schedule your ticket to go see the house, and we'll put you on a bus, and on your way to the house, we'll tell you the story, and when you get there, then you'll experience the house itself. So the house will be one attraction in a series of attractions that are available via the visitor center.
Yeah, that's great.
Wow.
And I guess the other fascinating question I have for you guys is, where are you going to, you know, curate some of the things that you can put in the house? You know, like, I would think some of them are gone, and some of them would just have to be replicated, and then others maybe the Disney Family Museum has, or maybe even Disney or the Disney family or somebody must have somewhere.
Yeah, and you know, just about everything will have to be replicated, because there are no photographs of anything that was inside of the house. There are a few photographs of the house from the outside, including one with Walt and Ruth on the front porch. So we know what the exterior looked like, and there are a couple of accounts from Roy about the color of the house. So we know that the house was white with blue-gray trim. And we're actually having spectral analysis done right now of paint samples from the exterior of the home as well as the interior. But many of the interior spaces have been changed. The house was kind of chopped up into a duplex at one point. So there's an upstairs apartment and a downstairs apartment. Walls were moved around over the years. An extra bathroom was added. The house was extended twice. It was lifted once. That part of Chicago flooded, and all the homes were lifted up about 2.5 feet. So there have been extensive changes to the home. And what we're doing is working with historical preservation architects and the city historian to recover as much as we can of what the true story is. And then whatever we don't know for sure, we'll fill in the blanks with historically acceptable examples. So what would a working class family at the turn of the century, what would have been the kind of furnishings and carpeting or flooring or paint that they would have used, and that's what we'll use. So it'll be very hard to know, and we will definitely work closely with the Walt Disney Family Museum and the Walt Disney Birthplace Museum to discover as much as we can. And whatever we can recreate, we'll recreate, and where we need to guess, we'll guess, but we'll do it very, you know, logically and make it historically accurate.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds great. I love
it. So interesting. Yeah. And also, you have this this other motivation for building. I know that you're going to be kind of teaching kids how to live out their dreams. Can you talk more about that a little bit?
I can, and it's what attracted me to this project. You know, I had a very successful career in another industry, and I was a senior executive at a telecommunications company, and have been in that industry for a long, long time. But I've always been doing mice chat on the side for about 10 years now, and I've been in the theme park fandom since before the internet. So I've always had a huge love of Walt Disney and the Disney parks. And when Dina and Brent approached me with this project, you know, I was really reluctant. I knew I could do it, and I thought I would be a good fit for it, but I couldn't imagine leaving a successful career to take an enormous, you know, pay cut to run a nonprofit. But when they started talking about our ability to inspire kids and to use the story of the house to inspire a whole new generation of dreamers and doers, I was hooked. And what we've done is we've launched a nonprofit, a 501c3 called the Center for Early Childhood Creativity and Innovation, that will be based out of the Walt Disney Birthplace. So the story of the home, the seven Disney family members living together, Walt and Roy breaking through, Walt becoming an artist, creating all these beloved characters that are known the world over, and looking at the community today and seeing that it's still very much the same as it was way back in 1901. It's still a working class neighborhood. It's still a community of people who are struggling to make a living, but people who are very proud of their home. And we can point the kids in the neighborhood to that house and say, do you know who was born there? And do you know that someday you could be the next Walt Disney? That you could really make a name for yourself? And it doesn't matter where you come from. You know, anyone can achieve their dreams if they stick to it and they get the right education and they follow their passion. And that's what Walt did. You know, he had a number of failures over the years, but he kept going and he kept going, and eventually, you know, he became the Walt Disney that we all know today. And it's an inspiring story that we will definitely use to help kids discover their creative passions. You know, are you a dancer? Are you a singer? Are you a sculptor? Are you a painter? Are you an actor? You know, what are you? How do you creatively express yourself? And, you know, it's a huge piece of learning that most schools have completely eradicated. And in these days of really tight school budgets, the first thing cut were the arts. And sadly, we're now seeing a culture that is focusing more and more on violence and crime and things like that, and we've gotten rid of the arts, which would help counteract a lot of that. So we'll do what we can to help inspire the kids in the community there in Chicago, but we'll take this message nationwide. So even though the house is in Chicago, Illinois, CESI, the Center for Early Childhood Creativity and Innovation, will be everywhere, and we'll be able to inspire kids throughout the country and hopefully get a lot of Disney legends and retired artists involved as well, and help take them on the road and introduce them to kids who need a little inspiration.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. I think the arts is probably sadly the first program to go in most schools when they're, you know, budget problems. And that's probably not where we should be cutting money, but...
Yeah, it's true. And if you look at crime statistics and the loss of arts and education funding, they really go hand in hand. And while we've not done that study, I mean, more and more people have been contacting me to say, you know, Todd, that's absolutely right. You know, as we focus as a society less and less on creative expression, how are kids to express themselves? And if they don't know how to express themselves creatively, they oftentimes will turn to more violent sorts of expression. And remember when you were a teenager and an adolescent and how, you know, your emotions and your hormones and everything, and you have a very hard time figuring out how to express yourself at that age. And if we get the kids young enough and teach them how to express themselves properly and, you know, what their creative forms are, I think we'll see a big turnaround in this country. And I do hope that not just with the Birthplace Project and CESE, but as a whole in our society, we can help restore the arts. Wouldn't it be sad if there isn't another generation of animators or artists or musicians and all those skills that went into making those beloved Disney films? You know, there certainly wouldn't have been a Mary Poppins if the Sherman Brothers hadn't learned how to write music, or Walt Disney hadn't learned how to animate, or the movie industry, you know, didn't exist because there weren't creative filmmakers and writers for the story like P.L. Travers. I mean, all of that comes from the arts, and these are some of the most beloved and memorable things in our lives. You know, the things that we can all communicate together about are the films we love and the cartoons you watched as a kid, and those are all beloved elements, and yet somehow as a society today, we just don't feel they're important enough to teach in the schools.
Yeah.
Isn't that incredible?
I agree, 100%. It's you know, it's a dying thing, and somebody, you know, needs to kind of turn it around. If you guys are going to do it, that's great, you know.
Yeah, and you know, the challenge for us is it's all very expensive, and you know, we've got a tiny little house there, so how is it going to generate money to sustain itself? And the fact of the matter is, it can't. So in order for the home to be preserved forever, it's really going to take the community of Disney fans and of art lovers and animation supporters to come together to make this happen. And yes, we'll be able to do some with the Walt Disney Birthplace Visitor Center, where we'll have a little soda fountain and some attractions and a little store, but that could never come close to covering the cost of restoring this home back to the way it would have been and being able to maintain it forever. So we'll have to create an endowment, we'll have to get corporate entities involved, and that all comes from the fans. You know, each individual person can help donate. And if there's anyone out there listening who works for a company or runs a company and you think that it might be a great fit for you to be involved with saving forever the Walt Disney Birthplace or helping the Center for Early Childhood Creativity and Innovation, we sure would love to hear from you because you'd be making a big difference, and not just in restoring a historical place, but in really helping change the lives of a lot of kids.
Yeah. Have you guys looked at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation? I know they like to get involved with school things and arts projects.
Well, it's definitely a great idea. And, you know, there are a lot of wonderful foundations and organizations out there. But a lot of time, you know, and everybody's after those same funds. You know, every charity in America would like to get involved with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation or any of the other number of wonderful foundations out there. But oftentimes, the way you get funded is through connections. So if somebody can make an introduction or recommend that, you know, a friend that runs a foundation or has a big company and is interested. And those kinds of connections go a very long way. And we've certainly had a lot of people, you know, on our behalf pitched the Birthplace or CESE to a number of organizations. So we're working a lot of different angles right now.
Good.
But, you know, we need to constantly keep working on that. It'll be a never-ending process.
Yeah.
Our ultimate goal is to start an endowment of some sort that there's enough money in it eventually that just off the interest will be able to maintain the home. And at that point, we'll know that no matter what else happens, there'll be enough money in the bank that we can keep the house restored and painted and God forbid there should ever be, you know, a natural disaster, restored back to its original condition, because it's a real landmark, a real treasure of a place.
Yeah. Good.
Absolutely. I love this. I love the whole story and what's going on now and what's going to be coming in the future. Another favorite part of the story, though, that I have, Dusty, that I'm hoping you'll share with us is the history of Ozell's soda brand and how it's helping to fund the project and restoring the home.
Well, Krista, this is one of my favorite parts of the story, too, because, you know, the turn of the century, Coca-Cola and Pepsi were taking off and making millionaires out of people, you know, soda, and it was the safe alternative to alcohol. And this was around the time that the temperance movement in America was trying to keep people from drinking alcohol. And Elias Disney, Walt's dad, was a church-going man. In fact, he built a church that's just around the corner from where the Walt Disney birthplace is. And he was really big into the temperance movement. And he had been investing in a company called Ozell, which hoped to make sodas, you know, the safe alternative to booze. And eventually they had moved to Kansas City at that point. And the gentleman who owned Ozell contacted Elias one day, and Elias was one of his big investors. And he said, you know, Elias, we really need you to come back to Chicago and open up our soda factory. So Elias picked up Walt and Ruth and Flora and moved back to Chicago. And this is after they'd already been in Marceline. And he opened up the Ozell Soda Company. Well, sadly, they were never really able to successfully sell enough Ozell to keep the factory going. And they tried selling jams and jellies for a little while, but sadly, Ozell folded. And when it did, it kind of bankrupted Elias. You know, poor Elias lost all of his money that he put into Ozell, which was sad because, you know, they didn't have a lot of money to begin with. But we have resurrected Ozell, 100 years defunct, and we've picked up all the rights to Ozell, and we're manufacturing the Blue Ribbon Root Beer and the Vanilla Dream sodas, and every penny that we make goes towards restoring the home that Elias Disney built. So in a way, we're giving Elias all his money back. And, you know, Elias is finally a success at Ozell. And it's just a really fun little part of the story. It's another aspect of Disney history, and you're able to buy some of it, and it's delicious. We're making it exactly as they would have made it back in Victorian times. So it's just effervescent water, natural Hawaiian cane sugar, natural flavorings, and that's it. There's no high fructose corn syrup. There's no artificial colors or flavorings. It's just in glass bottles, you know, naturally flavored carbonated water and sugar. And it tastes unlike anything you've ever had because we don't know what real soda tastes like anymore. All of our soda is so heavily processed, and there's so much fake junk in our sodas. So it's really, really fun. In fact, I'm looking at some right now. We're talking, and I've got 6 bottles of the Blue Ribbon Root Beer on my desk that Bob Gurr just signed for us, the Disney Imagineer who invented the monorail and the Autopia and all that. And, you know, Bob's first big job was with Walt Disney. Walt hired him himself, and he was in the office to get the tour the other day, and he signed 6 bottles of Blue Ribbon Root Beer. So I'm looking at them trying to figure out, what are we going to do with this? Certainly there's a way that this can help the project move forward. So I'm going to figure out something neat, and some lucky Ozell purchasers are going to end up with a signed bottle of root beer.
Oh, I love that. And also, isn't it true that like somebody stumbled on an old stock certificate or something? And how did you find out about Ozell in the first place?
Yes. I was having an event for the Walt Disney Birthplace for Mice Chat. This is before I was hired on to be the executive director of the project. And it was the first big event that had been hosted for the Walt Disney Birthplace. And Dave Mason came to the event. And some of you may know Dave. He's involved in the theme park industry and sells Disneyana type of items. And he had a stock certificate for Ozell that was made out to Walt Disney. And he presented it to Dina and Brent at the event that I ran. And after the event, they took it home and started researching and found out that, my goodness, you know, Elias was really heavily involved in Ozell, and that it was defunct. And it didn't take them more than a couple of days when they decide, well, that's it. We have to resurrect Ozell. We have to get this soda company back running. You know, it's another piece of the Disney story. And just like we're bringing the birthplace back to life, we have to bring the soda company back to life. It's part of the story. And there's a way for the soda company to help preserve the story and help keep the birthplace going. So they're so determined to do, you know, fun things and the right thing around here. And sure enough, they turned it around. And within a couple of months, they had bottles of Ozell manufactured and in the old-fashioned way. And it was really hard to figure out how to do that the old-fashioned way because there were so few people that can make it that way. And we tracked down a company that was making all-natural sodas and had them help us. It's a company based out of Hawaii called Waialua. And they said, sure, that's how we make all of our sodas. And they helped us get started. And now we're ramping up. In fact, I'm just about finished with a whole new flavor. And I'm very excited to tell you all that our next flavor is going to be Elias Disney's Cherry Elixir. And it's a cherry-flavored beverage with just a touch of cola flavor in it, and it is incredible. It's this deep, rich cherry flavor with some herb type of notes to it in the old-fashioned Victorian style.
Wow. Wouldn't it be great if you could find somewhere, like, the original recipes to, like, Ozell soda somewhere?
Well, I have some.
Do you?
In fact, I have the recipe for something right now called Roselle by Ozell. And we are looking into making Roselle. The problem is a lot of tastes have changed over the years.
Yeah.
And a rose-flavored beverage might not be very attractive to people today. It would smell wonderful. And in fact, we've been trialing some. I'm working with a flavorist out here in California to do just that. In fact, there are a couple of original Ozell flavors that we are looking into replicating. One is a pineapple flavor and one is this Roselle. And we tried this Roselle recipe and it was disgusting. Maybe if that was what they were trying to launch the company with, that is why it didn't take off. But, you know, it would take a lot of sugar to make this rose-flavored beverage taste right. So what I'm looking at doing is doing a soda that's inspired by the Roselle, maybe that has a little bit of the rose in it, but also maybe has some berry or something else in it to make it a little more palatable. So enough of the rose that you can kind of smell it on the nose, maybe taste a tiny bit of it, but rose is pretty bitter. And, you know, we'll balance it out with some berry or something sweet so that we don't have to overly sugar the soda just to make it drinkable.
Yeah. Or I think a lot of, not a lot, but there were some, you know, sodas that were supposed to be, you know, when you say elixir, you know, it was almost like it was supposed to be, you know, something to help you cure your arthritis or, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. What they were trying to do was overcome the temptation of people to drink alcohol. So, you know, some of the elixirs and sodas and fizzes and all that stuff were replacements, really, for liquor and for wine.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the case of the cherry elixir, we're calling it an elixir because we'll have some herbs in it. So aside from just the cherry, there'll be a few little herbs and spices in there to kind of give it a little richer of a flavor than just pure cherry, which is pretty basic. So we're giving it a little punch to kind of give it a little extra pizzazz to make it unique. Can't just be another cherry soda out there or another root beer or another vanilla. We don't want to be run-of-the-mill. We want to be unique and very Victorian and inspired, and they would have used the natural herbs and things that they had available to them. So, you know, you'll have a cherry elixir with a little touch of rosemary and a little bit of thyme and, you know, just some herby notes to it that really make it rich and really unique. And this last batch that I tried, which is what I think we might go with, is unbelievably delicious.
Yeah. Now, the next thing you have to do is get it in the parks. I think if you put it in one man's dream and you have like a little tasting station, I think that would be killer.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to let you talk to the Coca-Cola
company.
I'll call
up George Calabrese.
And get them to make a waiver, because unfortunately the parks have an exclusive agreement with Coca-Cola. But if Coke wanted to buy or license Ozell as a way of helping fund the Birthplace Project, we would sell it to them. Because really our goal is not to become a soda company. Right. It's to save the Walt Disney Birthplace. And this is, it's a story. It's something for us to talk to people about. It's a way of us engaging with people who maybe aren't theme park fans or may not know a lot about Walt's story, but may like beverages. And it gives us a chance to bring them into the story as well. But if Coca-Cola were interested, or the parks had another way of bringing us into maybe just a few select locations, we would love to do that. And we have talked to some folks with the Disney company, and they all agonize over it because they love the soda. We were actually at an event. We premiered the product at an event filled with Disney executives, and they loved it. And they were all lamenting the fact that there's no way they could really get this into the parks under the
without offending some other cola company.
That's right, with an unnamed cola company.
Exactly.
Which is Coca-Cola. That's how unnamed it is. It's so unnamed that it's Coca-Cola.
In the meantime, though, the good news is if you really want some Ozell soda, you can order it online. Is that correct?
You can. You can order it online at O-Z-E-L-L. That's O-Z-E-L-L.com. And we sell it right there online. We sell it by the case. And, you know, it's a little more expensive than regular soda, but it's all natural and it's nothing bad in there for you. And it's a little bit of sugar. A little sugar never hurt anyone. Think of it as hummingbird food for the soul. And it's absolutely delicious, and it's certainly a lot better for you than the stuff that's filled with high fructose corn syrup and all that other nasty stuff. And I think you'll really like it, folks. And if you are ever at an event that I'm running, I usually bring some Ozell along with me, and at those events you can buy it without shipping costs. So if I'm at an event near you, make sure you swing by and demand your bottles of Ozell, because it's great stuff. Every Disney fan should try some.
We also hear that the magical world of theme parks will really come to life in the museum. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It will. Because we make theme park attractions around here, as well as restoring the Walt Disney Birthplace, we hope to put a little magic into the museum and maybe have some interactive theater type of experiences. And we're going to use a virtual reality set so that you can put on a helmet and be transported back to 1901 to see what it would have been like in the time that Walt was born. So you might find yourself there in the living room of the house, and the front door opens and in walks Elias Disney with his tool belt on, and out the door you can see horse-drawn wagon delivering milk or ice driving by, and you might see the folks walking around in the neighborhood and what they would have been wearing. Definitely Flora will be wandering around with little baby Walter Disney in her arms, and it'll be a real experience for you to hear and see what life would have been like back in 1901 is only we can do. And it's actually something that Super 78 is noted for. They were the first to use kind of virtual reality technology to model attractions. So they can design an entire attraction digitally and have you put a headset on, and you can visualize exactly what the attraction will look like in three dimensions with this headset on. And we'll use that same technology for folks for entertainment purposes at the Birthplace, so they can not just see the history but live it and be part of it for a few minutes.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. Good immersive experience again.
Yes, indeed. And so there at the Visitor Center, we'll have an Ozell soda fountain, hopefully, and where folks can get a root beer float or get some soda. We'll also be selling, you know, very simple, old-fashioned Victorian foods. And then we'll have a small store for the Birthplace and some Victorian-inspired items. We'll have the interactive theater experiences and attractions. And you'll be able to reserve your your time to see the Walt Disney birthplace and take the bus over to the house and get your private tour of the home. So it'll be quite an experience for the folks in Chicago. And if all goes really well, we might even take some of those experiences on the road. So they might come to a town near you.
Yeah, that would be fun.
So exciting.
Yeah, it's really incredible. And for a theme park nerd like myself, and, you know, I've been living and breathing theme parks since I was a little boy, and it's all because of Walt Disney. You know, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in today if it weren't for Walt Disney. Certainly wouldn't be restoring his home if there hadn't been a Walt Disney. But all of this speaks to me so personally, and I know there are hundreds and hundreds of you out there listening who feel the same way. You love Walt Disney, you love the theme parks, you love the movies, and you wish there was a way for you to be closer, more involved with the Disney heritage. And there is finally a way for you to not only be involved with Disney, but help really save and restore Walt's legacy. And, you know, Walt's gone, and his daughter, who built the Walt Disney Family Museum, is gone. And it's really all of our duty today to uphold that Disney legacy and make sure that it doesn't slip away. And it's really a family values, you know, safe and friendly and clean, you know, like Walt kept his parks and his movies, and it speaks to people. You know, Disney is for everyone. And let's do what we can to make this happen, folks. Let's make sure that Walt's birthplace is restored and that we can teach future generations of kids, you know, what Walt would want them to know.
Do you, is there a finish date for the project that it'll be completed?
It's a fluid number. We are working right now on the exterior restorations of the house. And frankly, the house is a very fragile thing. It was built in 1893. The original wood slats on the exterior of the home, the original siding, is still on the house. And about 85% of that siding is viable, meaning we can keep it. But some of it needs to be replaced, and it's going to be incredibly expensive for us to have those bad slats removed and replaced with slats that look almost identical to them. So the same type of wood, and we'll have to age the wood to be the right consistency and color. And then we have to restore the windows. All those new windows that have been put into the house have to be removed, and we have to put in historically accurate windows and historically accurate doors. And then we need to paint the whole thing before winter hits Chicago, because for those of you who are from the Midwest, and especially those of you from Chicago, know winters are brutal up there, and they can be a lot of ice and a lot of snow and certainly a lot of very, very cold temperatures. And that old wood is all exposed right now, and we have got to protect it. So time is of the essence. So there's never been a more critical time in this project than there is right now. The next couple of months are going to be a mad dash to get the house restored and painted. Then in the spring, we'll do some more cosmetic type of changes to the house. We'll be rebuilding the front porch, putting in a fence, doing some landscaping, planting trees, hopefully soon getting some sort of a sculpture into the front yard of the Disney kids. And we'd like to put a plaque, hopefully on a rock or something very nice that sits out in the front yard, to let people know that this is the home that Walt Disney was born in. And all of that will happen hopefully by the end of next summer. So this winter we'll do the critical exterior restorations just to stabilize and secure the home for the winter. And then we'll do cosmetic in the spring. And then by the end of summer, the whole exterior will look exactly like you would want Walt Disney's house to look. And the city will have something they could be very proud of, and people can start driving by in the neighborhood and showing their kids, you know, look, you know who was born here in your own neighborhood? Walt Disney. You know, and that'll be so neat. But the interior restorations could take some time, and that will all depend on you guys. And the more money we're able to raise for the restoration, the quicker we'll be able to do that piece. But the most important thing is to secure the home and make sure that it's not going to, you know, topple down or the exterior siding rot away. So we'll do that right away. That's the critical part. And everything else is the icing on the cake, and it takes however long it takes. I think we would all like to see it complete within a year or a year and a half, but I can't can't make that promise. And we're going to need folks to jump in on some of our campaigns. And it's nothing that I can give you a URL for at the moment, but we do have a website for the Birthplace Project, and that is thewaltdisneybirthplace.org. But very shortly, we're about to start a campaign on a service called Start Some Good. And Start Some Good is like a Kickstarter campaign, but for nonprofits. And we're just about in the month of October to launch a Start Some Good campaign where everybody can jump in and make a pledge. And in exchange for your pledge, you can earn some really cool items. So we'll have some neat experiences and items and shirts and hats and packages that you can get as a thank you for your donation. And hopefully if we raise enough, we'll be able to get started on the interior restorations shortly.
Yeah, I see this becoming a D23 event someday. Yeah.
We hoped, that would be great. And, you know, we certainly have had a lot of wonderful support from some of the folks that work at D23. You know, the Disney company themselves can't get directly involved. But many of the folks over at the archives and that work at D23 have just been so great and so very supportive of this project. They're searching through the archives for photographs and information. And they have a D23 expo coming up this coming summer in July, summer of 2015. And we hope to be there. So hopefully the Walt Disney Birthplace will have a booth set up at the expo. And if not, MiceChat will, and we will represent the birthplace. So one way or another, I want to make sure that the birthplace is there at the expo so folks can come and meet with us and hear about the project. And we'll have the virtual reality headsets there so you can put on the goggles and see what the house looks like. So some of the experience we hope to have right there at the D23 Expo this year. And in the meantime, all of you can get involved. Just go to thewaltdisneybirthplace.org and sign up for our newsletter. And as soon as we launch that Start Some Good campaign, we'll send you an email and you can be one of the very first supporters and help us preserve the house for this winter.
I love it. We certainly will. And yeah, absolutely. Oh, this has just been so awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. And we are just more than thrilled about the Walt Disney Birthplace and helping you get the word out. We're going to put lots of links to everything in the show notes, and we hope you'll keep in touch. We'll definitely sign up for the newsletter. I might already be signed up. And so we can be kept up to date on the progress. This is just a wonderful thing that you're doing. I'm just so thrilled about it. We're very, very excited. And we hope you'll come back on the show again really soon and talk to us some more about the progress.
Absolutely. And I've got to thank you guys, Krista, Tony. You guys are absolutely amazing. And, you know, shows like this are so important. And it's great that there are fans out there and they're getting involved with Disney history and Disney stories. And it's really podcasts like yours that help spread that news. So keep doing what you're doing because it's so vitally important to the fan community and getting the message out. And we can't thank you enough for having us on the show. So, you know, folks would like to reach out to me and find out more about the project, you can always find me online at thewaltdisneybirthplace.org. You want to know more about Ozell, it's ozell.com, and I'm also at micechat.com. So you can track me down. I'm happy to answer questions, and I've been talking to a lot of folks every day, and I love hearing your stories. So if you've got a little bit of Disney history or you've got a Disney memorabilia item that you think might be helpful to our cause, please let me know, and certainly we appreciate everyone's support.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dusty, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen to our show. We know there's a lot of great ones out there, and we're just so excited that you were here to hear Dusty share all this awesome stuff. So thank you so much, and we will see you in the parks.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees you through.